This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
From WVUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Tomorrow morning, after a 20-year voyage of discovery, the spacecraft Cassini will plunge to its destruction in the atmosphere of the ringed planet Saturn. Cassini has traveled nearly 5 billion miles on its trip to Saturn, and its years of exploration of Saturn's rings and moons, sending back incredible findings of oceans and geysers, and maybe the building blocks of life out there. This hour on Point, what the Cassini spacecraft has shown us on her long, as her long voyage comes to an end. Join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you dreamt of traveling the path of Cassini through the rings of Saturn? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. NASA's Cassini spacecraft launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, on October 15th, 1997. Here's the sound from Mission Control during that liftoff.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff of the Cassini spacecraft on a billion-mile trek to Saturn. Pitch program is in, roll program is in. We have cleared the tower, and the Cassini spacecraft is on its way to Saturn.
That was October 1997, a long, long trip and lots of exploration, years of exploration around Saturn once the spacecraft finally arrived. And now, well, NASA's calling the plunge to its destruction tomorrow, the grand finale. Here's a little bit of a NASA-produced video describing how the Cassini spacecraft will end its long mission tomorrow morning by burning up as it enters Saturn's atmosphere.
After 20 years in space, NASA's Cassini spacecraft is running out of fuel. And so, to protect moons of Saturn that could have conditions suitable for life, a spectacular end has been planned for this long-lived traveler from Earth.
That's a clip from On Point, one of the new shows you'll be able to hear on WVXU and WMUB starting next month. The program is an in-depth look at the news with host Tom Ashbrook, who brings listeners the day's newsmakers, cultural icons, and thought leaders in a fast-paced hour of conversation. I recently talked with Tom Ashbrook about On Point and his approach to covering the top stories of the day. Tom, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be with you, Mark. Great to be with you.
Can you start off by describing On Point and what listeners are going to hear when they tune into the show?
On Point is a daily interview show that covers the whole gamut from the news that's breaking right now under our feet to all kinds of realms, social and science and the arts. We start with the news and we sort of expand out from there. We get top experts from across the country, from around the world, people right in the thick of what's going on. And then we invite callers in as well so they can interact. And we've got callers from all over the country who will be calling in to interact with people who are right in the middle of the news that's unfolding or new breakthroughs and understanding of what's going on. Interview and call in.
So, Colin, did you also take questions and comments by Facebook, by Twitter, by
very
email?
Actively. Absolutely. We have all of that coming in all the time, and all 24 hours a day, as we like to say. You can always join the conversation that way, and many people do from all over the country. Yeah, we really monitor that, and people participate in many, many different kinds of ways.
How many years have you been doing On Point now?
You know, On Point was born in the week after 9/11. NPR had just been going like flat out, of course it would have, after that tragic day. And within a few days, they put out the call and said, "We need fresh horses here." They put a call up to Boston, and Boston called out to me. I had been in newspapering for a long time, and I had been away from it. And they said, "Could you come in and help us out?" I came in. They said, "Could you go on the air 3 hours a day all over the country starting tomorrow?" And that was the birth of On Point. We did emergency coverage in the first days. And when the emergency period sort of wound down, everybody was so excited about the conversations we were having that we just kept going, and we're still at it today, 16 years nearly later.
So what is your approach, Tom, to covering the top stories of the day?
I mean, we're always looking for what do people most want to talk about right now, and that's what we go to. Whatever is, you know, these days we've got North Korea, we've just had Irma. Whatever is most present in the news, we turn to that first. What's right now? And then we also look at what's now culturally. What are people thinking about in terms of what's going on in movies or TV or the arts or science. We had a great conversation just in the last few days on Cassini, which had been out, the spacecraft, which had been out around Saturn and looking at all of its moons and rings and all the rest. Wherever people's curiosity is going, that's where we try and go. And we try and have conversations that are very frank. We don't try, we try not to get hung up on, ceremony or being politically correct at all. We want to be very straightforward and channel the questions that our listeners have about what's going on in the world.
So, Tom, it sounds like there's something, almost something for everyone in this show.
Yeah, we try to make it that way because, we've got a lot of loyal listeners around the country who listen every single day, and we want it to always be interesting for them. We've got a great staff here of, 10 or a dozen who are just working day and night to crack open the best stories, put them on the air with the best guests and all kinds of sound that makes you feel as though you're there in the midst of unfolding stories. That's our mission.
How did you get started in journalism?
Ooh, that goes way back. I had my first job in journalism at a newspaper in Hong Kong years ago. I had been there teaching and always just couldn't resist the pull of the news. I was a cub reporter at the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong, and I just got hooked right from the get-go. I love being in the middle of what's going on and having the platform to go out and put the questions to the newsmakers and who are making things happen and to the people who are in the midst of, feeling whatever's coming down. And I just never lost the bug. I changed mediums when I came over to radio from newspapers, but many years later, here I am still at it and still loving it.
Yeah, what would you say have been some of the more significant stories that you've covered in your career?
Ooh, plenty. Way back in the 19... I was there for the opening of China when Mao had died and China first began its opening to the rest of the world. I was there, it's a long time ago now, but when the Vietnamese refugees, the boat people, were coming up out of there. I spent 10 years in Asia, based in India and Hong Kong, China and Japan. Was there back in the days when Marcos got kicked out of the Philippines and when Korea was in deep turmoil, South Korea, and then right on through. I was foreign editor for the Boston Globe during the first Gulf War, which was such a big kind of wake-up call for Americans then. Was there to cover the fall of the Berlin Wall, was there in Russia when it was going through its big contortions, was in Rwanda and Somalia when they were having their terrible trials, in Latin America when it was struggling to find its feet, and in Central America in particular. And then, here we've been on the radio with NPR for everything that's gone on in these last 15, 16 years, the aftermath of 9/11, the Iraq war and everything that that meant, the election of Barack Obama and those 8 years, and then, of course, Donald Trump, which brings us right up to date here and has made the news more sort of kind of mind-blowing than ever some days, just where the country's going.
I also noticed in your bio, you have quite an extensive background. I noticed you've worked in Alaska's oil fields.
Yes, that's going back a ways, but yes, I did. I was a dynamiter in the mountain range between the Ogilvie Mountains north of the Yukon River, where they were doing oil exploration. I worked on the pipeline up north of the Brooks Range on the north coast of Alaska. This was back when I was very young and looking to make a buck, and the bucks were good right there. Now, I've done plenty of stories in the years since about everything going on with fossil fuels, but you know how it is when you're coming up, you just go out in the world and do what you need to do to pay for college and all the rest. And yeah, I did a fair bit of dynamiting in my day up there.
Did I say this right, too, that you were at one point producing kung fu films?
Well, yes. In the Hong Kong days, we had a pipeline that brought us kung fu films out of China before China was really open. These were old black and white kung fu films, and we would take them. We would dub them into English and sell them all over. It was kind of a third world market. These were not super sophisticated dubbing jobs, but they were great films, and we did our very best with them, and those went out all over the place. So, yeah, we were producing overdubbed Chinese black and white kung fu films from before the revolution for global distribution. And if you were, I don't know, somewhere in Jamaica back in the day, you might have heard me doing kung fu dubbing on your movie night.
Have all these things had an effect on the way you approached the news? Have they shaped you and how you look at the news?
Well, you know, every journalist brings a background to their reporting. I grew up on a small farm in the Midwest, seventh generation farm there that my family had settled way back in the early 19th century. And that is absolutely core to kind of who I am, that Midwestern farm-rooted experience of the world. But then went out, you know, went to college far from home, and then just kept going all over the world and all over this country in the years since. When you work with guys on the pipeline, you understand what a working man's view of the world is. When you come up on a small farm, you know what it means to have to deal with nature and with changing government policy and with markets. Everything you bring to it informs your sense of the world. I think it makes mine, I've been lucky enough to have a lot of experience all over the place, but it's very rooted in a kind of everyman view of the world. And I try and bring that to it every day. I don't think I can help it. That's just the point of view on the world that I have.
What do you hope people will get from listening to On Point?
I mean, we try and bring a sense of tough questioning to things. We don't want anybody just, you know, feeding us a line. And if they do, we try and cut through to get at what's actually going on. At the same time, we try never to be cynical because we got to live in this world and we don't want to be cynical about it. We want to try and push for lives and outcomes that are good. And most people, that's exactly what they want. And we try and stay very focused on that. It's not a cynical show. It's lively. We value people's time. We always think about value per minute. We never want it to be just people log rolling or politicians just, you know, shooting the breeze or wasting time. We will cut through. We'll push to cut through to what really matters. And we try and bring a sense of wonder to things because for all of its troubles, the world is a pretty wonderful place. And we always try and keep that in mind and look for the angles and people and stories that remind our listeners of that too.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great talking with you, Mark. It's great to be on in Cincinnati.
Tom Ashbrook, host of On Point. You'll be able to hear On Point each weeknight at 9 on WVXU and WMUB starting Monday, October 2nd.